Welcome to Vibe Talk Music. I'm your host, Vibe Queen. In this season, we will get to know artists and entrepreneurs living their life authentically and passionately. We'll talk about current affairs, meditation, entertainment, and any wisdom they have learned along their spiritual journey. Join me as we vibe and talk music. This episode is brought to you by Artist Collective, guiding artists and entrepreneurs through the music industry. Learn more and join today at artistcollect.com and get back to the music. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Vibe Talk Music. I'm super excited to have this week's guest, Chris Millett. He is the founder of a podcast called Make More Music. So he's a podcaster himself, as well as a music therapist. He is the winner of a two-time air guitar, which I'm excited to hear about all of that. So welcome, Chris. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself, what got you into podcasting for sure, and also your background in music therapy.
Yeah, sure thing. Well, thanks for having me. We had to deal with the rigmarole of getting this show up and running. It's the life of a podcaster.
Exactly.
I am, born and raised in Kentucky. Spent a little bit of time for the past few years in Florida. So that was really good to, make a big move for our family. It was huge. So we went down to Orlando and got a lot of good experience doing music therapy down there in a big hospital setting. So I've been doing music therapy for going on about 7 years, I think, and worked in a lot of different places. And there's a lot of music therapists that kind of do that thing, but I've always kind of been that jack of all trades type of person. So my podcast kind of gets into that. It's basically lets me kind of go where my flight of fancy in my brain is. So I talk to artists, I talk to people doing sound healing, I've talked to music therapists, I've talked to producers and engineers and broadcast media people. So I just like to show that, there's all kinds of people making a living doing something related to music. It's the kind of thing that I feel like if I was in high school, I would have felt less scared about my directions that I was taking if I'd known, like, oh, wow, you can do all kinds of stuff and make, you don't have to be a rock star. Like, you can have a regular life and still have fulfilling work in music. So that's what the show is all about, basically, at the thesis of it. Yeah.
That's awesome. And as you were describing it, the one word that came to mind is that collectively the word is healing. We're all bringing healing to the masses through music, which I think is such a beautiful thing. So can you share with us the beginning of music in your life? Like, at one point, were you perhaps an artist, or how was music introduced to you from childhood? Or can you just share that with us?
For sure. Yeah. And it's always where I start with my guests. So it's good that the tables are turned around. So for me, it's always pretty funny to talk about, because when my parents were, I would say were, they still kind of are, but they were deadheads, like real deal, Grateful Dead, following them everywhere. So by the time I was 5 years old, I had seen the Grateful Dead like 50 times.
Wow.
So yeah, so it was pretty outrageous. So I think the day before I was born, my mom was at a Bob Dylan show. And then, I think the doctor gave her a clearance like 2 weeks later, and they took me to a Grateful Dead show. So I cried when Jerry Garcia died. I was like 5 years old. So it was made a big impression on me. But as a teenager, obviously, I definitely rebelled against my parents' music. And I got into all kinds of stuff, really. But once I picked up the guitar in middle school, it like totally changed my life. Like, I played trumpet for a year and I loved it because I loved Louis Armstrong for some random reason. I just loved Louis Armstrong's trumpet playing. And I just wasn't that great at trumpet. Like, it didn't come supernaturally. It, like, everything hurt. Your mouth hurts all the time. And, I just noticed that other kids in the class were like advancing faster, but then I got a guitar in my hands and I just like took it. It just spoke to me really well. And I've just noticed that between different instruments that like, oh, I really jive with this. Like, piano for me, I had to learn it for school and I'm okay at it now, but man, piano is still like a fight. It's a tension. Mm-hmm. So guitar I took to, which was really great. You know, I quit doing things like playing video games and I just spent a lot of time learning guitar and first started playing in, you know, rock bands and blues bands and had kind of like a psychedelic-ish, Pink Floyd-ish inspired band in high school. But then I fell down the metal rabbit hole. I got really into a lot of metal stuff and like more along the like Iron Maiden, you know, more melodic side of that. And that's when I first started realizing like, I want to do something with music. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what it is. I was pretty sure like our band, I thought we were going to do it, but you know, we broke up in high school. So, you know, my dreams of getting a signed right away went. So I had no idea what I wanted to do. I thought maybe I didn't really want to go to college, but I thought if I did, maybe I'd do creative writing. I really liked my creative writing classes and my English teachers. And that was in the back of my mind, but I thought I was maybe going to take a year or two to not go to school. Mm-hmm. But I took this class in senior year called Experience-Based Career Education. And it was something that all the schools, all the public high schools in my city did. And you got to go job shadow, like whatever. So there was bakers and lawyers and doctor, all the regular jobs.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I saw there was a music teacher and it was my band teacher. And I was like, well, I don't want to shadow my band teacher for 4 weeks. Like I see him every day. Like I don't. So, but then I saw music therapist and it was, I didn't know what that meant, but intuitively I was like, that sounds awesome. Like, okay. And it said Eastern State. I think it was called Eastern State Mental Hospital at the time. And all I knew about it is that my great grandmother worked there in like the 30s and 40s. And it's a historic old facility. It's really crazy walking around there. They were like in the 1800s, this was the room we did lobotomies in. And this like, so it was really wild to walk around this historic mental health facility. And man, right away, I was like, oh, sign me up for this. Because just seeing how these people in the facility, they're usually going through a lot. And it's a lot of what they call in the medical community, like frequent flyers. So these are a lot of people that have some pretty intense diagnoses of like schizophrenia, borderline personality disorder, a lot of things that are on some pretty heavy psychotropic medications. And it seemed like what happened a lot was for some, they'd be doing good for a while. They'd get off their medications, have some terrible crisis and then be back. And you would watch the cycle over and over. But so with that in mind, there were people in a music therapy group that may or may not be connected to Earth at that moment. They may be somewhere in deep in some, sometimes a pleasant state, sometimes a very disturbed state. But it was amazing to see how she would get behind the piano and bring all these people together. And I just saw some pretty amazing things there. And she kind of like a little baby duckling, let me give a guitar lesson to this one guy that was there. And I got to help him perform. And we did a cover of Billie Jean for everybody. And just right away, I was like, this is it. Like, this is awesome. And just seeing that guy be fulfilled and knowing that I got to play a role in that. So luckily, right down the road was a public school where I teach at now, U of L, that taught music therapy. It was the only one in the state at the time. And I decided, like, just sign me up. I didn't really care about all the details. I was like, I never changed my major. There were a couple times it got tough because, you know, music school is pretty demanding. But I never changed my major because I was like, I don't really want to do much else. If I was going to do something more performing, I wouldn't go the classical route. I would be in a band, you know. So I really fell in love with working in the hospital. I really like that basically you get a consult from a doctor or a nurse or whoever, a chaplain, and they say this person's in pain or this person is experiencing a grief, or this person is going through X, Y, Z, whatever it is. Why don't you go? Sometimes it was, this person's a musician. Would you go check on him? So I just really love the aspect of, you know, being on your toes and not knowing what to expect and meeting people basically from all walks of life, from, you know, people with special needs to, you know, somebody who got in a car accident to somebody that's going through cancer care. And obviously all of those things can happen to anyone. So it was just cool, like meeting people, getting to know about their life, their culture, their history, their music, and just making music with people. Sometimes that was them listening and receptive. I really love that you do all the guided meditations and stuff. So sometimes I would be leading people through things like that. Sometimes it's could be as simple as teaching someone a guitar or teaching someone how to play something. Sometimes it's put a maraca in their hand and we're just playing some Justin Timberlake or something, to writing songs. That those are usually some of my most fulfilling things for me to do, is writing songs with people and recording those songs and memorializing those things. And that could be whatever. It could just be with a kid because it's Tuesday, or it could be helping someone navigate cancer care. Another cool thing that my buddy Brian Schreck is a music therapist who's been featured on, like, you know, NPR and everything. He's super famous. He's one of those guys. And he found out how to take recordings of heartbeats. And a common thing in music therapy now is I would take a recording of a heartbeat.
Excuse me.
No, you're totally fine. Take a recording of a heartbeat and embed that within a song. So, you know, if a mom is losing her baby, you know, we could capture that infant's heartbeat and put it into a song or write a song with them. And, you know, under the background, you know, I just EQ it. So you hear like, doo, 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 doo. Mm-hmm. So,
that's beautiful.
Yeah. So I love it. I don't even, yeah. So that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm a rambler. So I better pause and let you.
No, I think that's great. So I'm curious, how do you, as a therapist, diagnose, I guess, or how do you determine what method of healing your patient needs? You know, how do you determine, oh, this would be good for them, a meditation, or we're going to write music, or, you know, this will be an upbeat session. Like, how do you determine that?
Sure,
like, do you ask
sure.
questions first? Do you just feel it out? Do you wing it? I'm curious what your method
is. I'll kind of give like the blanket music therapy answer, and then I'll narrow in a little bit on my perspective. So through school, one of the main things you learn basically is the therapeutic process, which the whole kind of arc of that is, you know, meeting someone, building rapport, moving to assessment, which that could look like all kinds of different things, but basically seeing what's going on and what we might do about it. Like you're saying, the diagnosing the situation. To doing the thing, whatever the goal is, to evaluating, and then, you know, do we do it again? Is this a one-time thing? Am I seeing them for a long period of time? And then kind of going from there. So for me, and for, you know, any music therapist, that's one of the cool things I would say if any of your listeners are interested in it. I think music therapy is so cool because your personality gets to play such a role in what you become as a therapist. I don't know how much any of your listeners will know about all kinds of different schools of psychology thought, but there's all kinds of different ways that people practice. So there's some people who practice music therapy from a very analytical standpoint that is very, and I mean that in the sense of, like, you know, rhythm is processed in this part of the brain, and, you know, I can use rhythm to trigger a movement to help someone who is, you know, maybe speech after a stroke or regaining strength after a stroke. So using it for very rehabilitative things, to kind of the other end of the spectrum where it's, you know, there are a lot of music therapists who work far in the kind of more in this vibe talk realm, the spiritual, and noticing a lot about, you know, the psychodynamic processes of, you know, energetics and what's going on. And so, and then kind of everything in between. And there's, my practice is eclectic. So I just kind of draw from whatever I think is going to be most helpful. But my kind of overarching philosophy is called community music therapy and resource oriented music therapy, which is basically the idea of what resources, whether they be actual physical things or intangible things, what resources does this person need to be connected with to find healing? So that leaves it pretty broad, right? Because I can say, you know, they need some strategies to relax. They need some strategies to center. And that might be where I noticed that we need to either, sometimes I like to write guided relaxations with them. Like, you help me. What's relaxing for you? Mm-hmm. And then maybe I try a few different chord progressions out and go, how does that sound? You know, I throw in tension or something and see how they respond to it. I might just watch them and just notice, they're responding. They're wincing at that, or, you know, whatever, and watch those micro expressions and go off of that. But so all the way to, I work with one teenager and super talented and writes his own music, records his own music. And one of the things I do with him as a way of his mental health and his, you know, expression is he brings in his songs that he's working on. And with my audio engineering background, I talk through, oh, cool, I really like how you EQ'd the kick there. Or why did you make the decision to add a pad like that there? Or why that chord? And so I basically take an engineer slant, but then go a step deeper to say, what is this saying about you psychodynamically? What are you trying to express? Is it being expressed? Do they know what they're trying to express? Am I seeing something that they're saying that they don't even know? What, like, there's a subtext to their song that they don't even realize. So yeah. I really like that a lot too. So it's very personalized, the whole process. And it's very personalized, I think, to the individual that is receiving. And I don't even like that term, the individual that's in the therapy room that came there. Mm-hmm. And then there's the personality of, you know, the same way with a therapist, not everybody jives with every therapist. So right. It's a personal fit thing too. There's just a lot less music therapists than personal therapists. So
very true. I mean, on season two, we had my life coach as a guest. So I've never had a therapist before, but I worked with a life coach for a year. And so the main difference that she made is that a therapist works with trauma and works with past issues. Whereas a life coach, which technically, I mean, yes, you should, you know, certification would help, but technically a life coach, you don't have to necessarily be certified. Sure. And so with a life coach, it's more so, you know, you're able to already recognize your issues, if you will, and you more so just need accountability. And so a life coach is not technically allowed to give advice or tell you what to do. They're really just there to ask you questions. Mm-hmm. So you're able to kind of come to your own conclusion and figure it out. And so I had that kind of coaching, which was very helpful for me. And so I'm curious, with music therapy, is there part of the session where it is traditional therapy, where you do talk about those past issues and then you kind of bring in the music? Or like, what does that look like? Is it just music? Or can you explain that a little bit for those that may be a little bit confused?
Great question. It'll probably confuse people further because this gets into the gray area as well.
Okay.
It's like yes and no. There are some people that it looks very like traditional therapy. And it really depends. Like, people can specialize, and there's even advanced certifications and all kinds of things. And there's a lot of music therapists who are kind of chameleons anyways. Like, there's a lot of music therapists who get dual certified as a counselor or a child life specialist or a social worker or XYZ. I heard recently that there was a music therapist who also was a MD, a medical doctor. I was like, what is going on? So there's a lot of chameleons that do all kinds of things. Again, for me, it kind of looks different depending on the person, the comfort level of the therapist. I do, when it's right, there's times that it is, you know, a very talk-based session. And that uncovering, I like the idea. I think it's a Freudian idea of, you know, we only see so much of the iceberg and the rest is under the water. And sometimes that psychodynamic approach is just trying to chip away and get further down into the water. But I'll give you one example though. I'm working with a teen with autism, and he is not very big on the active making music, which rightfully so, says things like, no, I feel dumb. I feel like, you know, I'm going to mess up. Very self-focused and very anxious about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So there are times with people that I've worked with in the past that I've pushed that. And, you know, the getting out of the comfort zone is the, you know, the step at that time. But in this situation, what we've done is actually pivoted to making a therapy-centered podcast. That is, we come on, we have myself, my interns, and our, I call them a clinic artist. So we have our clinic artist, and I've just been telling them, okay, come up with a topic for us to talk about next week. And we've done a couple of episodes. We're going to release it eventually. And he's having a blast, and all it's basically like we're working on the social skills, the decision making, the, and what's funny is it's all on Zoom now because of, you know, COVID. Mm-hmm. So I think we talked about, you know, best rock song. And then the first one is best song from a video game. And then next week they want to do favorite song to chill out to. And it's just funny, like having these conversations with, you know, a teenager and just kind of letting him express himself in a way that I could push, I couldn't, you know, make him make music, but trying to be sensitive to like, what does this person need? And how can I adjust? Because, you know, if I'm the therapist, I should be able to mold and bend and not, there's a lot of talk in the past, you know, decade or so about like decolonizing the music therapy room. Mm-hmm. And moving away from that model of, you know, this is what's wrong with you, this is what you need to do.
Right.
To, you know, a space of healing. Because ironically, they come to a place of healing and they might be made to feel worse, you know?
Exactly.
So trying to be mindful of like, you know, there is a power dynamic at play. So how do we be mindful of that and honor that and use it respectfully and try and give away and create a space where I don't really even like that structure. So it's like, how do I create a space that is more open and more, you know, equal and, you know, a place. That's why I quit using terms like patient and client and started using clinic artist. Cause it's like, who does that serve? It's not, I'm not a doctor, you know, and you said you brought up the diagnosing, and that's a funny term in music therapy because our scope of practice is we do not diagnose X, like, which I know what you meant. You were just saying, how do I pick what to do? Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's part of music therapy is someone might come to us with a diagnosis. But even if I think someone maybe has like a speech delay, you know, I'm not qualified to diagnose them with a speech delay. I just say, I noticed they stutter, you know, or I noticed they're not, this young child is not reading at grade level or whatever it is. But it's basically my professional noticing. I have nothing in the way of diagnosing, which is kind of nice because it frees me as a music therapist to, okay, well, I'm more concerned about how do I make this music that helps this person unlock, you know, whatever it is in their life. How do we make music for music's sake? So on the other end of the spectrum, I've have sessions where maybe with a young child with developmental disabilities, I've improvised the entire time. Or the interns will look puzzled because I'll sit at a drum and maybe we're doing some chant for like 20 minutes or 30 minutes. And then the intern is like, I feel like nothing happened in that session. I was like, did you see how they made eye contact and they went up the minor third at that one point? And the, you know, and I'm bringing up like all the music theory stuff. And I was like, you're a musician. We've got to notice the music. We've got to notice what's happening there because I'm not a speech therapist. I'm not a physical therapist. I'm not a doctor. What we can notice with those things is the same thing anybody else can notice. What are we specially trained in? You took four semesters of music theory. Like, come on, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Well, something I want to point out also, which I really loved with the person you worked with that has autism, and you said, oh, let's talk about different, you know, music, is you're working at their comfort and at their speed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great because, you know, eventually maybe they will be open to making music, but exactly. you're doing what's making them comfortable. You're going at their pace. And I think that's awesome. You're not pushing you know, you're not pushing your ideology. And that's something that I noticed in another person's account. I don't know if you know her account. I've been watching her account grow from like, I think 100,000, I think now she's like 2 million. She's now a self-published author, The Holistic Psychologist.
I've heard of her, yeah.
Yeah, incredible. And so she walked away very similar to what you were saying, the traditional way of doing psychology to kind of like her own way mm-hmm. and being authentic. And I swear, you know, a lot of the self-growth that I've been able to do before I even got that life coach was simply through her account and just following the things that she was saying to do, the exercises and the journaling. And so I feel like oftentimes, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think if you're of sound mind and spirit and you want to heal, if you mm-hmm. follow a program, you know, whether it's a diet or a journal, mm-hmm. it's going to work. You for need sure. to just follow it. So yeah. I guess my next question to you, for those of you that are listening, and you know, they feel they're kind of ready to maybe try music therapy or therapy, you know, what advice would you give to kind of maybe even get started in a small way? Do you have maybe some quick tips or advice that you could share that are like maybe easy for people to implement that yeah. have worked for you?
Yeah, let me think on that. Well, definitely 100% agree with what you said. Like, for one, I agree with you because most of the time we know what we're supposed to do or need to do. The hardest part is actually doing it, you know? So, and sometimes that might be all a therapist is helping you think through and encourage you to do that thing. And you know, that's okay too. There's accountability in that. And there's, you know, I always think it can be helpful to process something with someone who is not, you know, your family, not your friends, not okay. your whoever, because you have these long-term relationships with these people, right? Like, they know you in a certain way. Sometimes this like outside opinion, even if they're going to say the same thing
right.
that your friends and family are going right. to say, knowing that, wow, okay, I kind of talked out to the mirror here, and the mirror told me this. So I would say, I think that it's one of those things that for me, my family, keeping a healthy pulse on, you know, how do we talk with someone? How do we go to a therapist? How do we, you know, are like in my faith, how do I go talk to my pastor? How do I do whatever? How do I check in and do these well checks in a way that you start to realize after time, hey, I'm not feeling well right now. Hey, I'm grieving this thing right now. Hey, I'm doing this. And like you said, you start to build up those skills so that you can build your own resiliency. So I think with music, and one of the things that I would offer, like you said, like you brought up, someone of sound mind, why would they consider music therapy? So I do think that there's an interesting intersection of, you know, musicians that maybe are in a spot like you're saying that maybe they don't need to come to music therapy in a traditional sense to do something like I was talking about. They're not learning how to speak. They're not maybe, you know, dealing with pain of a cancer diagnosis right now. But everybody's got baggage. Like, we carry around our invisible backpack filled with bricks all the time. So how do I maybe figure out how I can channel that through music? For one of the things I've been working a lot with my interns and also with music therapy students and young professionals is even as simple as, how do I connect with my instrument? How, you know, and for me, I really like to use the guitar as the way that I help people get to that, because all music therapy students have to learn guitar. And the average music therapist that learned guitar just because of school has this very strummy, cute, like little, but I listened, I was like, that sounds nothing like Marvin Gaye, or you can't play me a Post Malone song and that sounds like Post Malone, you know, like that sounds cheesy. So showing them like, you love really, really serious music. Well, why are you treating this type of music here as, you know, or the music you make here? Why is there this disconnect? What's going on? And kind of revealing the processes of like, oh, I've had people come to crazy realizations like, oh, I don't trust myself, or, oh, I don't want to be vulnerable with that. So it can be a painful process for sure. But I think, you know, processing traumas, connecting more with the music you make, connecting more with other people, creative ways. And I would say the main thing I would say is to not even, we both got people driving around. The main thing I would say is to start would be, have you thought about writing music or expressing music about that one topic that you've never done it before? I think that there's, you know, we have all these like closets, and it's the same for me too. It's like, what have I not stretched myself with musically? What do I know I need to do? Cause that's that same thing. What do I know I need to work on? And for me, just to like give you an example, for me, vulnerably is two things. A year ago or 2 years ago, I gave myself a challenge. I was like, I'm going to write 20 songs by the end of the year. And I think it was like September, like 2 years ago. And I didn't even finish all 20 songs, but I wrote quite a few, and some of them were pretty good. And the process of making myself write so many songs was I ended up writing a song about my parents getting a divorce when I was 8 years old. And there are some lyrics in there that I was like, whoa, I didn't know I felt that, or I didn't know. It's just this cathartic thing that came up because the title of the song is The Night the Plates Quit Flying. And so it's just like interesting thoughts like that. And, you know, what's that area that I need to explore or be brave or be courageous in and do? And if you need somebody to walk beside you, that's what I was saying. Our Instagram for the clinic's here. If you even just want to reach out and you want some suggestions, sounds great. But we live in now world of COVID. We can do music therapy sessions from anywhere, or I can find you somebody close to you if you want to see somebody in person. So there's great music therapists all over the US. I know music therapy is small enough that it's like usually a degree of separation. If I don't know someone, I know somebody who knows someone. We can do that for sure.
Yeah, it's so crazy how the good thing that has come from virtual everything is that you can be anywhere and everywhere, which is a beautiful thing. And as you were talking and you were mentioning earlier, how you were walking through the hospital hallways and, you know, there was such history and, you know, mental illness and borderline personality. I don't know, the thought just occurred to me. I mean, I'm sure I've read this somewhere, but I kind of like, you know, perhaps none of us are broken. You know, none of us are necessarily, none of us are broken. I just feel like, I don't know, I'm kind of like rambling here, but I feel like the way you said that music together and the way that somebody can start playing the piano, and no matter where that person is, they can have 10 personalities over there. They can be disturbed over there. They can be happy over there. Something about the music waves for a split second can just bring people together. And it just gives me this feeling like we're not broken. We may just all be in different places, but I don't think we're necessarily broken. And I feel like perhaps, you know, this is just my personal opinion. And, you know, definitely in certain situations, medications are necessary. Now, I have epilepsy myself. I take medication every day. I've been on medication for, oh goodness, half my life. But I wish I didn't have to be. However, part of me feels like it doesn't need to be necessary. I feel like if we can get to the core root and the core issue, especially with trauma victims, it can be healed. And I don't know, I feel like music can definitely be an important part of that healing. So it's just, it's very interesting. I know there should be a question in there. But
no, you bring up, no, I think that queued up a lot of cool things. So I'm trying to think, well, for one, I'll just tell you this because you'll find it interesting. One of the populations that I got to work with a lot at the hospital in Orlando was actually people going through the epilepsy surgeries. So these were people that had failed with multiple medications, right? And they were having maybe severe seizures, really debilitating, really getting in the way of living a full life. So I just can't imagine this. And I can't imagine that in the state of medicine in 2020, we're still removing part of people's brains for epilepsy surgery. You know, to me, I was like, wow, that feels really archaic. But, and right after surgery, there's a huge deficit usually because you've taken a chunk of this person's brain out, or you've split their corpus callosum so that the two parts of the brain are not even talking to each other. Oh, so what's really interesting is how music could come right in. And, you know, I'm working with Bruno Mars with some kid, and their right side that hasn't moved in 3 days is suddenly drumming. And it's amazing. It is actually like jaw on the floor. Amazing. And even it amazes me, even the person that like has read the research and the science, it's still every time it's like, this is so amazing. It's incredible. The wonder of it is still like so awesome. But two other things is I really like that idea. It's like, maybe we're not broken. It's like, yeah, maybe we're exactly where we're supposed to be. And maybe, you know, we've been dealt this card of whatever it is. And, you know, it's the time that we are in, and it's the story we have. And, you know, yeah, like you said, no one's saying don't seek things to fulfill your life, or, you know, if the medication is there and that is the thing, like somebody had to invent that medication. You know what I mean? Somebody else had to be creative. But I do think it's interesting too, of shifting that paradigm of like, maybe let's not look at us all as sick and look at, you know, us as whole or as humans. And that's the last point is music has been in almost every religion and every philosophical orientation going back as long as people have been writing. There's been music there. There was music there before people were writing. So I think it just goes to show, the thing that like blows my mind is the fact that music to me, philosophically and spiritually, has to be important because our body responds to music like the other things that keep us alive. Like, it's crazy to me that music in our brain does the same things as when we get food, shelter, sex, like all these things that keep life going. Yeah. So it's like, there's got to be something here, you know, and we're still at the stages of neuroscience that we just kind of know that. We don't know why. We're like, man, that's wild. But there's something there. And I think that to me is always amazing. It's like, and that's why I tell teenagers, and, you know, I was a teenager. I listened to, you know, music that was what it was when I was a teenager. But now when I'm working, you know, with youth in foster care, I'm telling them, hey, this song is really cool, but be careful what you put between your ears because it is shaping you. And it's fine if you listen to that. I'm not one to tell you what not to listen to, but I just want you to be aware that that what you're listening to impacts you and the words that are being said. And it's like, would you actually talk to a woman like that? Like, would you actually say that? And then of course, you know, almost all of them say no, or, you know, my mom would smack me, or, you know, whatever. And so it's like, well, you gotta be careful. And I think, there's no reason to be some kind of strict, you know, I can't listen to whatever, but it's like, just, you know, be aware. It's the same thing. It's like a slippery slope to a drug addiction, right? Like, there's a big difference between having a beer and being an alcoholic, but, you know.
Well, I think it all boils down to awareness. Mm-hmm. And I love that you said that before. I think awareness allows you to make choices. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people lack awareness. And maybe they're not even aware that they lack that awareness, and myself included. And so I think once you have awareness, then you're able to make a choice. Mm-hmm. And I think if you are able to make a choice, then it's your decision, and mm-hmm. that's on you.
What
I mean with awareness is true awareness. Like, I know, like, okay, oh, I shouldn't listen to that music. I mean,
but why?
Going even deeper. And like, I'll touch on this briefly before we wrap up the episode. I don't know if you're familiar with wave frequencies, and I only discovered this about a year ago with like, still technically a conspiracy theory, but the whole 440, 432 hertz.
Sure.
Have you heard about this or no?
Yes.
Yeah. So when I started researching that and just the effect it had on water and the crystallization on water, and knowing that we're made out of, you know, I think
a lot of water.
Yeah. I was like, okay, there has to be something to it, you know? So even things like that with awareness. So it's like, okay, as a musician, as an artist, okay, I can record my music in 432 Hertz. I can be aware. But I wasn't aware before. Mm. I wasn't aware that our music was changed. And so I've been listening to music in a different frequency all these years, not knowing. So I really truly mean awareness to the most highest capacity. And I feel like, you know, and that's what I talk about with the corruption and the things in the music industry. Mm. There's so many things that are going on that just even as independent artists, we're not aware of. It's hidden from us, and it's unfair, you know? So I think if we can shed light on that, and the more we talk about it and the more we know, the more we can start changing that, and we can change the narrative, if you will, just as you're doing with changing little things like correcting me and saying, no, it's not diagnosis, we don't say that, like I didn't know that, you know.
And it's one of those things
that you're shedding that awareness. That's how we can move forward and evolve. So I think
I also think like what we're doing, though, I think real awareness and real conversation in a time of 2020, when like I feel like people don't have an option to be ignorant about being aware this year, right? There are so many things. I mean, that's a bold statement, but there are so many things going on.
I think you're right.
There's so many things going on that like we are at a lot of crossroads that we have to make a lot of decisions, especially in the US. And I, like I was telling you before we started recording, like I'm in Louisville. I'm like at the middle of all of a lot of things going on with the Breonna Taylor case. Right. This is live. So obviously as of last week, it's been very crazy and very sad. And I think conversations, that's the thing, is like people need to come to the table ready to talk, but also ready to listen, because if you're not ready to talk, but also ready to listen twice as much as you talk, you're not going to get any awareness. You know, you're just going to keep doing your thing. And when it relates back to the music community, you know, as an artist, it's funny because how many people, including everyone all the way up to the chain to, you know, record execs, they're not aware. They're not even aware of what they're perpetuating, right? They might be perpetuating something that is...
Oh, they're very aware.
Yeah, fair enough.
They're very aware. They're very aware.
But there's still people that are cogs in the machine that work up the ladder who in their step of awareness...
I think this is how I'm going to compare it. It's kind of like the military and government. Sure. It's need to know basis.
Mm. Yeah, no. And that's not okay either.
No, it's not. But that's just how it works.
Yeah.
The reason I know this is because of my own experience. My father is military, and he explained that to me. He's like, you know, you're on a need to know basis, and it protects everybody involved. I mean, think about it. Even if you are in the mob or if you're in a drug ring, think about it from a logical business perspective. Why would I tell the person who just came in everything about my operation? If they got arrested, they're gonna rat on everyone. So it's on a need to know basis. It protects everybody involved. It makes complete sense. So the music business is the same way. It's all the same way. It's need to know basis. So I do believe that people up top know exactly what they're doing.
Fair enough.
I don't think they're at all. And, you know, I was married to someone in the music business, so I have a lot more experience than I typically share publicly.
Sure.
But with that being said, ultimately, what I always encourage all artists to do, you know, whether I share this publicly or privately, is, you know, I don't try to convince, convey, or push my beliefs or what I believe to be true. I just share what I think is true, and then I encourage other people to do their own research. And that's exactly what I've done. So, you know, when people disagree with me or challenge me, I actually welcome it, because that's how I grow and evolve as well. And so if I put my foot in my mouth, or if I share something that may be, you know, offensive or trigger someone, well, first off, you know, you're a therapist. If somebody is offended or triggered, that means they took it personally, and that's something that they need to deal with, right?
Yeah,
and
for one, yeah.
To me, I know, oh, that person just hurt my feelings or triggered me. Okay, what is going on within me that I need to resolve that, sure. Right? It's not really on them. but also it allows for, like you said, a conversation to happen. And so I think in this climate and in this day and age, with so many hot topics, with the election, Breonna Taylor, COVID, there's just so many hot topics this year. Like, pick your battle.
It's heavy. Yeah, it's
heavy. Like, you're right. I think what you said is true. Like, if you're going to be ignorant, that's like not being
That's choosing exactly what you said, the need to know basis.
Yeah. So I think having conversations is a great thing. And I think if we disagree, that's totally fine. We can all have different beliefs as long as we hear each other out and we're kind about it and we listen to understand and we don't listen to respond. I think that's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. And I hope that we can continue to do that. And there's not this culture of cancel culture and this culture of like, oh, you don't believe what I'm saying, or we don't share the same belief.
Yeah.
You're not my friend anymore. And I've experienced that. I've lost a handful of friendships because of it. And it's just so sad to me, including family. And it's just unfortunate. So, but yeah, that's just my take on it. So.
And it's that, yeah. We could go another hour on that, but
I know.
But yeah, it's all hard because none of it is black and white. All of it is gray. Like, there are things about, you know, cancel culture. Like, should we be calling out a lot of things? Yes. Like, there are a lot of things that, like, that is despicable. I'm glad we called that out. But
you can call it out. You can call it out. You can bring attention to it and we can talk about it. But I just don't believe
this meanness, this hatred, this.
Yeah, I don't think that's productive in the big picture.
No,
that's just my opinion again.
Yeah, I'm with you, though, on that for sure.
That's just my opinion for now. We can all have our own opinions. So. Yes. But
any other world problems to solve? Yeah, yeah.
I know. With that being said, you know, this episode is all about Make More Music and the wonderful things that you're contributing to the music industry, which I think you're doing an amazing thing. And there's not enough people in your industry, unfortunately. And I love the fact that you shared that it was because you shadowed, you know, someone in high school and you had that. And I didn't have that in high school in this country. I had that in Europe, actually, which I forgot about because I wasn't born and raised here.
Wow.
So I came to this country when I was 14. So high school starts when you're 11 in Holland. So I remember having a similar experience that you had in Holland, which I totally forgot about that. Like, I did the same thing. Music therapy was not on the list, though.
Nah.
So that's really cool. So it's pretty awesome. But before we wrap up, I always like to ask every single guest to share just some spiritual or business wisdom that kind of really resonated with them on their journey that we call life, that you could share with our listeners that they can kind of integrate into their path that has helped you, if you can come up with anything, kind of put you on the spot.
No, that's good. I'm just trying to pick the best pearl of wisdom for you.
Or if you have a couple, that's totally cool too.
Let's see. Well, from my perspective, I think the more I've learned how to make things less about me and more about not only other people, like, I think that serving other people is an amazing way that we can show love. But I think stepping even back a couple more steps, especially related to the topics of Vibe Talk, is like, how do I be less of me and less of serving and less of focus on that and more aware of humanity as a bigger whole, more aware of spirituality as a bigger whole, and whatever that means for the person's walk of life. But when the more I step back and look at the as big as I can get the picture, as macro as I can get it, the more the details make sense. The more I realize this is what I should say, or this is what I should do, and this is how I should treat this person. And the more I reverse that is the more I do the things that, man, I wish I didn't say that, or man, I wish I was nicer in that interaction or whatever. I think trying to get into cosmic perspective, if you will, is a great way that I, you know, realize my speck of time on earth, as well as like the ability to be nice and to be kind moment to moment.
I love that. cosmic perspective. I think that's your quote.
That's good. I'll take it. I really like that.
I've never heard it put that way. So yes, Chris Millett giving us his cosmic perspective. I appreciate that. Tell everybody how they can best support you, Where they can follow you, and all that good stuff.
Great. Well, if you want to know anything more about music therapy, you can literally just hit me up. I'll tell you anything you want to know. I'll answer whatever questions you want to know, and I'll tell you where schools are and what you have to do and things like that. If you're interested in doing therapy, if you know someone that wants to do therapy, if you have a family member, whatever, reach out to me. Right now, we're even filling the schedule with things like lessons. And so if you're interested in whatever, my primary is guitar. So if you're trying to get better at guitar, you can reach out to me and we can do that. But that's at U of L MTC on Instagram. It's the same on Facebook/U of L MTC. You can find links to our website and stuff like that all on there. We're going to have that podcast coming out in the near future. So that'll be fun if you want to kind of have another glimpse. As far as Make More Music, the podcast is available on all the big podcast places. That is on Instagram, on the ticker below at make.more.music. And I'm getting ready to have a season break through the holidays. So now's a great time to catch up, listen to all the episodes. I've got a lot of cool things coming. I'll give your listeners a sneak peek. I've got a lot of builders come together, and I'm building a guitar. And
oh, wow.
So I'm kind of going to talk through the build process of that. So that'll be super exciting. Other than that, if someone wants to, I put new music on the end of the episodes. If there's any independent artists that want to shout out, they can reach out and I can play some of their music. Yeah, sounds great. Let's do it. And, you know, if you think you've got something super interesting to say, hit me up. And I'm always open to at least saying yes or not right now. So just hit me up. It won't hurt. So, yeah, that's cool. My buddy has an album coming out soon. So him and I are recording that. So if you follow along on the Instagram, you'll know when that's coming.
Amazing. So I knew it. You're still a performer.
A little bit. I try to.
You can't escape that. So
no, it's too much fun. That's my fun thing. That's for me.
I love that. That's awesome. Well, there are a plethora of artists on Vibe Talk Music. So yeah, definitely. If you guys are listening, hit up Chris.
For sure.
But thank you for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you and just learning more about music therapy, which is very fascinating. But yeah, thank you so much. And I'm sure we're going to stay in touch.
All right. And then Friday, we're going to chat again too, right?
Yes, we'll be live.
All right.
Okay, thanks. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. To stay in touch, please subscribe to my newsletter over at vibequeenmusic.com to stay up to date with my music and guided meditation, this podcast, and to get your free manifestation guide. Till next time, and remember, self-awareness is the gateway to inner peace.